Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this one accidentally has a theme.
Yes, it does. We have a very strong healthcare medical theme. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with a mall with first aid for all. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the CEO with my ideal doctor, Mr. Adrian Davis. How are you, man?
Good, good. Thank you for having me. I sincerely appreciate it, and just trying to get over the weekend.
So what happened over the weekend that you need to get
just,
over?
Just a little family, you know. I've got a five-year-old and a four-year-old, so they keep you busy.
So you need another weekend.
You need a day or two to decompress. Exactly.
So myidealdoctor.com, you guys are involved in telehealth, is that right?
That's right. We started about 3.5 years ago, and myself, along with two ER physicians, and really just with the thought of transforming healthcare and the delivery modes within healthcare. And so when we started providing 24/7 on-demand access to physicians by phone or video who can consult, diagnose, or prescribe if need be.
So that's kind of telehealth in a nutshell, right? It happens all over the phone or through the computer?
Both. So it can happen on your mobile phone and through the computer or by phone as well.
So if I have a problem, I contact this number and then somebody calls me back. How does the interaction
occur? So we actually have three ways to connect. So you can either call our nurse concierge call center and schedule a consult, or you can go online and schedule a consult through your personal portal, or download our mobile app and schedule a consult through our mobile app.
And then does it replace my doctor, or is this like an additional?
No, absolutely not. We're complementary. So we definitely do not want to replace your PCP. You know, when you look across the healthcare world, we've got a lot of non-emergent care that goes into our ER that can be redirected through more appropriate modes of care, such as telehealth, and the same with urgent care as well. You know, we try to focus on the medical side of our business, episodic care, so your cold and flu, sinus infection, pink eye, etc. And then a couple weeks ago, we just launched our behavioral health. So for anger, stress, anxiety, workplace issues, life issues, marriage issues, you can give us a call and have a therapy session with one of our counselors.
So mental health?
Yep. And it's a little bit different on that side. On the mental health side, we do 25-minute and 50-minute sessions all by video. And so we have licensed clinical social workers, professional counselors, and psychologists who are there to help.
I would think new mothers would like this service too, because don't they get like a little more anxious that when your first kid as opposed to like your fourth, right?
They do. I mean, when we look at our demographics, 65% of the time our user is a female and her average age is 36.
Wow.
So millennials, you know, folks that are accustomed to getting what they want when they want it, anytime, anywhere, and pretty quick. And so that's really our user base.
So now, how did the idea come about?
You know, really looking around, I've been in the healthcare industry for quite some time. And back then, when we started, you had PPACA. You had healthcare costs skyrocketing. You had access issues. You had, you know, physicians kind of not as many in the field. And so really it was, you know, you had technology too. You had iPhones, you had Android devices. And so looking around saying, hey, you know, what can we do? What can we really look at to kind of change healthcare? And chose telehealth. And so, like I said, started on the medical side. And really when we started, our customer base and the majority of it still today are employer groups. So self-funded groups who pay their own claims, who, you know, want to provide more convenience and access for their members as well as reduce cost.
This is a benefit to their employees?
Exactly.
So the employee, it's absorbed in their benefits fee. So it's not they pay extra for this. This is just included in their benefits?
Exactly. Depending on how their benefit structure works. But yes, absolutely. So some could have a consult fee. Some may not, just depending on their plan. And then obviously health plans as well. So in the Medicaid environment where, you know, you obviously have access issues and providing those members, you know, better access and convenience and and the third party administrators. So it's a growing industry. It's still a very young industry. And so I think we're all, you know, the business model hasn't matured. It's, mm-hmm. it's still evolving, but it's exciting.
Now, when you're working with a company and you're trying to explain the benefits of doing this, are they typically, have they worked with another telehealth company, or are they, this is something they're trying for the first time?
I'd say maybe 20% have, you know, when we're out there in the marketplace.
So a lot of education, you're educating them about why they should do this. And
yeah, but they know about it. You know what I mean? It's something that they've heard about, they know about, they have another buddy in HR that has maybe implemented it, but there's a lot of green space in our field. So a lot of times, I mean, you know, when you really look across the employer spectrum, really, I'd say maybe 30% of employers have implemented telehealth. So you've got another 70% out there. And then obviously the health plans and the TPA market and Medicaid. And, you know, I think you're going to really see it grow in a couple of years in the Medicare market. You know, we've got to have some CMS regulations looked at for that to happen. But it's growing, and it's a big need.
So now, the attraction for an employer, I think it makes sense to me that it might be because now I've got people calling into this service that might otherwise have a much more expensive emergency room trips. I mean, there's bottom line beyond just being good to your employees. There's bottom line value in this for an employer.
No doubt. I mean, when you look at the hard cost and you look at a typical ER visit, you know, that runs around $1,000. And believe me, a lot of people go to the ER for very minor symptoms. And
that's true. That's not like, you know, you hear about stuff like that, but some people use the ER still as kind of a primary.
A lot. Absolutely. It's really amazing. So, you know, really when you're looking at the ROI, I mean, it's anywhere from 3 to 1 to 5 to 1. And just the convenience and access. I mean, you know, we live in Atlanta. And so the average time for you to leave this building, go to your physician's office, get your prescription and come back is 4 hours. So when you're looking at productivity cost, I know there's soft cost, but there are cost involved. And so when you're looking at a large organization, you start adding up those hours, it makes a big difference.
Now, do you have people that like call all the time, or is that just a minority of the?
Not really. Not for us. I mean, you know, we may have one or two there, but we do reach out to them and let them know that, hey, you know, first of all, telehealth is not appropriate for everything. I mean, we're not doing brain surgery over telehealth. And so, you know, we really don't have any abusers of the system.
Like even old people, because like my dad's old.
And, yeah, yeah.
Like that for sports,
something to
old
do.
People.
It's like social. Doctor,
right?
It's like social. No, no
right.
doubt.
I mean,
no
I'm
doubt
not
about
saying
it.
My dad does that, but there's people like that's what they do. You know, I'm going to the doctor on Tuesday, and then on Wednesday I go to some specialist, and
yeah,
that's their week.
Not for us. I mean, we are limited in what we do. You know, we cannot prescribe any DEA-controlled drugs, any lifestyle drugs, and so forth. So we're very limited. So we do have our scope. And plus, we try to, you know, that's one good thing about, we own our own nurse concierge call center and the only company that does. And the nice thing about it is we can kind of control the flow. And so we have set protocols of, you know, what we can do and what we can't do. And so so if it's something that, hey, is out of our realm, you know, we make sure that we get that member to the appropriate follow up.
And then what is your sweet spot? What are the things you guys do well and that what people should lean on for you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the quick access to care. I mean, you know, you can under 15 minutes speak to a physician. We have it two ways. You can we have kind of the Uber-esque model where you can see first available, or you can just schedule an appointment, say at 5 o'clock. I know I'm getting off at 5 o'clock and schedule an appointment then.
So like if I had a cough, like I've had a recurring cough for a few weeks. I don't know if it's something, it could be nothing. You know, I go to WebMD and they tell me it could be, you know, allergies or it could be lung cancer. You know, like I have a spectrum here. So I can call this service. And they would ask me some questions that I would have at least a better idea of what it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or go online and see a physician face to face by video. Absolutely. And, you know, back to your other question, we're very consumer centric. So, you know, starting this with some ER docs, they wanted to make sure that we were consumer centric because it is a different type of delivery model. So we do a 4 hour and a 72 hour follow up care call with our nurses. Mm. And so essentially 4 hours, hey, how the consult go? Were you able to pick up your prescription? Are you feeling, You know, if you've got any questions, give us a call. You can go onto your patient portal and review your visit summary. And the 72 hours is more or less a safety check. Hey, how are you feeling? I'm feeling great. Good. If not, let's get you follow-up care into your PCP urgent care.
And your backstory, how did all this get started?
So I worked with two large healthcare companies, one called Baxter and one called Philips. And so when I was with Philips, me and a couple folks within Philips got a distributorship for about 35 states in women's healthcare ultrasound. But really, you know, looking at kind of the device and model within medical equipment, it was something that was getting very commoditized. And so just really looking, wanted to stay in the healthcare field, knowing it's a big field that we do need to transform for the better. And just, you know, after looking at a lot of different options, chose telehealth.
Does it surprise you, Lee, that it's video? Because sometimes create some extra challenges for people on the other end, or is everybody pretty video capable?
No, I mean, yes and no. Absolutely. I mean, everybody is pretty much video capable. I mean, I'm sure, you know, Lee's got a camera on his laptop he's got set up.
That's true.
You obviously
I have one
have...
of your doctors here listening.
Right.
Yeah.
Make sure you don't say anything.
Right. I should.
That's true. You're on every laptop.
You've got one on your phone. And so obviously there's connectivity issues sometimes, you know, but it does work. And, you know, I think, again, we're still evolving. A couple years from now, when you have better connectivity, you know, you see in the city of Atlanta, Google Fiber coming everywhere.
Right.
And so it's just going to get better and better and better for the consumer, not only in what we do, but there's also a lot of different types of telehealth, like stroke and cardiology and so forth. And so you're going to see it evolve. I mean, and you're going to see it be, you know, one of your first access points into the system.
Now, once a company, you know, decides to work with you guys, what can you share some success stories where they implemented this and then they were able to get either better, I guess, financially made more sense, or maybe they had you saved somebody or you were able to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the biggest things is a morale booster. You know, when you look at healthcare across a company, I mean, obviously we provide healthcare, but you know, I don't, you know, my employees in most corporations don't come to us and say, hey, I love the insurance you have. I mean, it's just spectacular. I mean, you know, this is fantastic. I use it every day. And whereas with telehealth, you get a lot of compliments. The HR directors get a lot of feedback. And it makes morale boosting.
So personal.
It's so personal, without a doubt. And, you know, I mean, everybody's rushing around these days. You've got kids. And to be able to speak to a physician and pick up a prescription in under an hour is great. Great for that person. Great for their family.
So the prescriptions are the main benefit, you think?
No. I just think access. I mean, a lot of our consults are informational. Hey, doc, I've got this rash. What type of cream do I need to get? Hey,
and then
I've got
this. You're like showing it on the computer screen.
Yeah, without a doubt. Hey, I've got this cut. Do I need to go get stitches? My 5-year-old got a cut on July 4th, about 8:30, when we're about to leave to go see the fireworks. And, you know, we were able to take a quick picture, send it. Hey, should we go in and get stitches? Absolutely. I think you need them. So, boom. We're off to the races. And so a lot of it's informational, but at the same time, it's cost. I mean, you know, when you're really looking at cost, and costs are skyrocketing through the healthcare system, it's a big motivating factor for companies and, you know, for health plans and for third-party administrators who are, you know, trying to do what the best they can and providing great benefits.
Now, when you have kind of several different target markets, I guess you have the employer, right? You have the health system and you have the insurance people.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you go at each one with a slightly different message? How do you kind of approach that?
A little bit, but believe it or not, they're very similar, because really in this world, there's only two types of insurance: fully insured or self-funded. So self-funded are usually companies with over 200 employees who pay their own claims. So that, you know, your card may say Aetna or Cigna, but in reality, Aetna or Cigna is just a third-party administrator, or what they call an ASO, administrative services only, that's really doing the paperwork and the network behind the scenes. At the end of the month, that employer still gets the bill for everything. So the employer is really the insurance company. And then on the fully insured side, the smaller companies where you just pay a premium and you don't have to worry about anything else as the owner, You know, that in that regard, that insurance companies obviously want to reduce their cost as well. So they kind of mix, because even when we're dealing with a self-funded employer, we're still also dealing with their third-party administrator. So they're intertwined. You know, when you have different buckets, or I should say member populations, so a Medicaid, so some health plans will have Medicaid. They offer also commercial insurance.
Right.
Yes, that does differ, and what we're trying to do differs, especially bringing in the behavioral health, because Medicaid and Medicare focus on what's called HEDIS measurements. And so it does differ, the messaging differs, but at the end of the day, it is access and reducing cost and providing value.
So the benefits are the same for either party.
Yeah. Yep.
So how does the day-to-day sales and marketing thing work? Are you out talking to like HR people and or ASOs and or these other?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm out doing a lot. So whether it's product and product development or sales and marketing, we're out doing a lot. And so obviously conferences are big for us, and really kind of getting to, you know, their director of strategy, their director of telehealth, and our director
of innovation. So companies have directors of telehealth?
Wow.
Yeah.
It's that?
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, without a doubt, health systems have it. Health plans have it. So, you know, again, they're looking to really kind of spread their wings. Because, again, we're not the only, you know, there's different aspects of telehealth in the marketplace. And so so they're looking across the whole, you know, broader market as well. But yeah, we are out, you know, just discussing and doing pilots and implementing and really trying to figure out, you know, what's best for their members. You know, we're still a small startup and a scrappy startup, so we're very nimble in what we do. So we really don't take the same approach with everyone, which is good for our customers. So it's exciting. It really is. And just being able to, you know, work with the customer, because a lot of times, you know, we don't have maybe the exact program they're looking for, but we get together and we figure something out and we implement it just for their population. So it's fantastic. It's exciting. It really is.
Now, when you go to the conferences, are you going as a speaker or you go as a
Little vendor? Bit of everything. So sometimes I'm a speaker. Sometimes we're a vendor. Sometimes we just go and we call it being a lobby lizard. So, you know, you're just kind of, you're just going around networking and meeting folks. And so, so a little bit of everything, to be quite honest with you.
So you're kind of at the exciting time of the business here.
We are, you know, a lot of growth, a lot of opportunity, you know, make sure that, that we're focusing on the right things with our product and with our sales organization and with our back end as well. Just to make sure it's a seamless, implementation process and, you know, a seamless, encounter when that member needs us the most.
Now, what was the thinking behind adding this behavioral health field
element? Good question. So behavioral health is big. There's a lot of cost involved in behavioral health. I mean, when you look at someone with depression, 69% of the time, that population only reports physical symptoms. So with that being said, there's tons of misdiagnosis. They're staying in the system. There's more misdiagnosis. There's more cost.
I'm sure there's productivity issues. There could be like drinking, there could be other
substance
kind of,
abuse, right. Absolutely. And so it's kind of that 80-20 rule. And really, when you look, behavioral health has got a lot of tentacles. And when you look at kind of medical episodic care, it's more straightforward.
It's than kind of transactional,
health.
Right? Because
exactly.
You know, the thing happened, then it's done with. But
yeah.
In this, it could be lingering, and it could be.
Oh yeah, you're having continuity
chronic,
of care.
Right.
Yep, continuity of care. You're having therapy sessions. And there's a lot of cost involved. And so it's making sure those members who, you know, may have a stigma and they don't want to go into a behavioral health
right.
provider's office and sit in the waiting room and look at everybody
right.
else there. They feel more comfortable by doing it through a video session where they can be in the comfort of their home. And so it's one, a lot of cost are in the system. Two, believe it or not, anywhere from 30 to 60% of a population, whether that's an employer group or a health plan group, has behavioral health needs.
Wow.
Yeah, it's big. And so it's really just trying to get get them the access because they don't necessarily go and find help for themselves
on their own.
Yep.
Now, was this something that your customers asked for, or was this something you kind of drove as an organization?
But, it was Adrian's idea.
Yeah, yeah. If it works.
He read a blog post right. and said, that's what we're going to do now.
Yeah, no, customers asking for it. You know, it's one of those things where we've had it on the roadmap and customers were asking for it, and we wanted to make sure we did the right thing. We built it. We have a pretty neat system because when you come in, you actually take an assessment. Mm-hmm. And it could be as short as 10 questions, could be as long as 30. It's an algorithm digging in. So it's very dynamic. So how you answer question two, question three will change. That report's sent to the provider. So it gives them a good idea of, you know, where you're at before they have the consult. And so it makes a big difference, and our providers are, you know, really happy about that. And plus it offers historical trending. So for them and for us, we can actually see the progression, of what those therapy sessions are doing, which is remarkable because usually, you know, you're just writing stuff down on paper and you have it in your mind, but it's good to see that historical trending data for a large group of.
So you're doing assessments throughout the process, so you're seeing actual improvement rather than, oh, they did 8 sessions, so, like, you know, we're done, whether they're done or not.
No, you're going to see improvement. I mean, well, I shouldn't say you're going to see improvement, but you don't necessarily cap it at whatever sessions. I mean, that's really between the provider
right.
and the patient, where they would want to leave that. So, you know, a patient may only want to do 2 sessions. A patient may want to do a whole lot more. So that's really between those two individuals. And then, you know, obviously just like it would be in an office setting.
Well, I know that as a patient, I know that I would appreciate, particularly if it were an ongoing thing, I would appreciate being able to go back into the portal and look at where we've been, what we've talked about. That to me would hold tremendous value. I have a question to ask you from the practitioner's perspective, and it's coming from a completely different field. Some years back when I had a real job, I was in the learning and development environment. And as much of that arena made the transition from sit down, shut up, give me your milk money, and I'll teach you something. And you all went to a room and a person stood there. As consultants and trainers made the transition to e-learning and webinars and that kind of thing, it was a challenge for some of them. You know, they may have been very accustomed to teaching. And I just wondered if there's a little bit of a growth process or even a training regimen. But there's a transition that some have to make. I would think practitioners, that it would be different for them when they're consulting over the airwaves. Have you seen that happen? Yes.
We have a really good training program for those practitioners. You know, what you see a lot of is the younger practitioners who are very in tune with technology.
They're already there. Yeah.
And they're learning at med school. And so they're already there. And a lot of our physician on the physician side, you know, our ER docs who are 3-on, 3-off, 7-on, 7-off. So they have availability. And then the younger providers, you know, in the behavioral health world, they're already there and they see it.
Great.
And they do it. You know, really, when you think about it, I mean, telehealth's been around 100 years. I mean, you called your doctor when phones came out and talked to your doctor. I mean, it's nothing really new. And even behavioral health in the U.S. military, in the VA, I mean, really, that's where it kind of started, you know, probably back in the 80s. And so it's been around, but now it's kind of catching up. And then on the member side, as far as utilization, yes, it is something new to them. So we try to make sure that, you know, we reach out to our members through Blast or social or whatnot and really try to let them know that we're here for them. Because, you know, how often does you know, your company tell you, hey, use your insurance today? You know, it just doesn't happen. Yeah, use it, please. It just doesn't happen. And so it's a different mindset for us because we want to drive utilization. We want to make sure you know you have the benefits. So when you need us, you know us, give us a call, sign up online, and have a physician waiting for you in 15 minutes.
So now if I'm a company that's thinking about calling you, what is the pain I'm having that you're the solution for?
So if you're a company, it could be cost reduction. It could just be benefit structure and looking at whether you're PPO or HSA. Could be just access and convenience for your members. You could be you know, a manufacturing company where, you know, your manufacturing sites are across the Southeast, but yet they're in rural locations. So you're having to, you know, drive.
So it's hard for them to get to a doctor, right?
It's hard for them to get to a doctor. And so there's a lot of different different aspects and different mindsets of why people want to use us and work with us. But you know, at the end of the day, it comes back to you know, morale, cost, and patient satisfaction and just really access and convenience.
I think this is fantastic. Where can our listeners go to learn more?
Yeah, absolutely. And so please go to www.myidealdoctor.com and check us out there, or go to info@myidealdoctor.com. That's MYIDEALDOCTOR.com. And again, my name's Adrian Davis, and I sincerely appreciate you guys having me today.
Oh, glad to do it. And if you don't catch him in that fashion, you might see him hanging out in the lobby at an HR conference or a medical trade show. You no telling where they might find you.
Yeah, I will be somewhere, I promise you.
Well, thanks so much. This has been very informative, and I look forward to learning more about this. Can you hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Oh, I'd absolutely love to.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us from First Aid for All, Amal. And I'm going to let Amal tell you his last name in just a few moments. But before he does, what'd you learn in that last segment? What'd you think about that?
I mean, I thought it was great. Apparently, there are a lot of different innovations in healthcare that are really important for the, I guess, accessibility for the consumer. So I think it's great, all these innovations.
So First Aid for All, can you share a little bit about what you guys are up to?
Yeah, so we are a student-led nonprofit organization that focuses on alleviating medical inequality. And we try to do so in a four-way approach, distributing first aid kits, spreading awareness, volunteering throughout the community, and raising funds to help support our programs. So I started this organization my sophomore year, last year. And since then, it's really grown, and we've helped more than 500 people. So I think it's gotten some pretty good improvement.
So then when you graduate high school, you got to quit because it's student-led. You got to kind of pass the torch.
Yeah. I mean, wherever I go, I definitely want to start a chapter there. Definitely want to like have it throughout my life. And we've spread our membership across 8 schools now. We have students from Northview High School, South Forsyth High School, Chattahoochee High School, Johns Creek High School, Lambert High School, and a couple of others. So we're trying to gain membership to help spread our cause so that it would get more attention.
So now at any one of those high schools, what are those folks doing?
So as of right now, we just have the students from them. So when the school year starts, we want to start the actual club at those schools. So then each individual chapter at those schools would help fundraise, help do different presentations at different places so that we could spread the awareness about medical poverty and the need for medical supplies in impoverished areas, and just help underprivileged get shorten the gap between accessibility.
Are you talking about, when you say underprivileged, is that in America or is that internationally?
It's both. So we try to alleviate this medical inequality both domestically and internationally. In Georgia, we've tried to network and make a difference in Atlanta as well as in Athens. And
so there's issues here in Atlanta.
Yeah. You'd actually be really surprised. Between 2009 and 2013, 25% of Atlanta's residents were below the poverty line. And even in Athens, 23% of its residents are below the poverty line. So like within here, even though the United States is such a wealthy country, there's still a great gap between the rich and the poor. And we want to help shorten that gap.
So now share with us a little bit about what the poor's experience with healthcare is as opposed to the wealthy.
Right. So a lot of people who are poor can't necessarily afford the healthcare, but also they don't necessarily have a direct access to different medical supplies. For example, whenever we're out on the streets distributing these first aid kits, a lot of them have never even had an actual first aid kit to use. Whenever they have physical symptoms, which like start to cause problems with them, then they go to the hospital. But they don't have anything to solve any minor problems. So for example, whenever they have like a bruise or something, they don't necessarily think that it's that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. Only when maybe pus starts growing out of it or something else starts happening with those injuries, then they go to the doctor or the hospital. So we want to be able to act as a first step for them to like take care of those injuries.
So where are you getting the actual supplies from?
Yeah, so we have a two-part funding model. We operate on fundraisers as well as supply donations. So last summer, we worked with the Atlanta Braves to sell baseball tickets, and we just ended our World's Finest Chocolate fundraiser. So through that, we've gotten of more than $1,000, and all that money goes directly to our first aid kits. And we also rely on supply donations, in which Augusta University, formerly known as Georgia Regents University, donated almost 100 Band-Aid boxes to us. So we use these different supplies to distribute them to the impoverished.
Now, are you building these first aid kits yourself? So you're taking all these various supplies and combining them into a package and then donating those packages?
Right. We do that, in which we got those Band-Aid boxes from Georgia Regents University, and we make it into a bundle, and then mm-hmm. we give it to the people, or we use the money that we get from our fundraisers to order them from online, and then we get these first aid kits, and then we also donate those.
All right, so what got this all started for you? Did you have a specific experience, or you just got to digging into what was going on out there, learn some of these, shocking for me anyway, numbers about poverty and medical poverty? What got it all started for you?
I think it's both. I've always been into giving back to the community. And when I was younger and I would go on family vacations to India or Mexico or even downtown Georgia, Atlanta, I'd always see a lot of people on the streets asking for money, asking for food or other basic resources. So it got me to thinking that here in the United States, like even in Georgia, there are a lot of people asking or in need. So in such a wealthy country, these are the situations. So if there are so many people here that need help, there must be a lot of more people in other areas, a lot of more poor areas who need help. So then I thought of different ways to give back, and I looked into it, and there were a lot of different organizations that gave money or food or clothing, but not necessarily on the medical side. And I've always been interested in healthcare, so I thought of some way to somehow give medical supplies. So I looked into it a bit more, and I found that there are a lot of different clinics that do give services to poor people who cannot necessarily afford insurance or other financial responsibilities. So, but the problem with them is that the people have to go to the clinic. So the people have to go to the medical supplies, but I wanted to do something different. I wanted to make it where the medical supplies go to the people. So that's when I thought of giving first aid kits and giving them to the people. So the people wouldn't have to go somewhere else to get the supplies. It comes right to them. So that's when I thought of First Aid for All.
So now when you have these kits, have you seen them when you give them and hand them to the individual? Like, what's their response?
We have a lot of mixed responses. A lot of them are like extremely ecstatic because they've never had a first aid kit before. Like, I remember specifically in Athens, I once gave it to them and they didn't even know how to use it because they had never seen one before.
Did that surprise you?
It actually did. It was like because of here in Atlanta where we're, at least where I live in Johns Creek, it's a very posh area. So a lot of people don't necessarily, like a lot of people learn a lot of basic things such as this. So, and a lot of people have access to these first aid kits. So it was just surprising that outside of this area, there are a lot of people in need. So to that person, we like opened it up and showed them how to use those specific
right.
items.
So now did that impact how your future kits are going to be? More self-explanatory, maybe more elements that are more intuitive rather than things you have to kind of figure out?
Yeah. So now what we do is whenever we give them the first aid kit, we explain how to use them. Mm-hmm. And we're in the process right now of making brochures, which have like instructions on them and other nearby areas that have different medical services.
Now, how do you recruit the kids in the high schools to get involved with the organization?
So we usually just talk to them. A lot of people are interested in giving back. So we ask them if they want to, you know, embrace a philanthropic services and if they want to join on. And then they, a lot of them say yes, they'd like to do something about it. Then we talk about First Aid for All, and we talk about our approach to alleviate medical inequality. And a lot of them are really just like happy to join on with the project.
So what do you need most now? Do you need relationships with other organizations that are in touch with some of these impoverished folks to kind of help you with distribution? Do you need boots on the ground? You need more supplies? What do you need most right now?
Well, we actually have, we've had a really strong networking. We've gotten in touch with a lot of different organizations that deal with homeless shelters or even abroad. For example, in Thanksgiving break, we were planning to go to Ghana, in which I've gotten in touch with the medical director who's in charge of 30 different clinics and hospitals. So we are going to travel around the rural villages there, and we're going to work with medical students and nurses there. So our networking has been pretty good, but our biggest problem is the capital. Because we're student-led, and there's only so much that we can raise on our own. So we're trying to reach out to businesses for sponsorships to get more money so that we can get more first aid kits and make a greater difference.
And you're partnering with some of these, like the missions and things like that?
Yeah.
In order to distribute the...
Yeah. For example, just last weekend, we donated a lot of kits to Atlanta Mission. And there's another organization's Physicians Working Together that we're working with to set up a health fair down in Columbus, Georgia. And there's another business called Sensational Cup, Sensational Cakes, which like gives us cupcakes or other desserts to like, you know, feed the homeless or something like that. And we've gotten in touch with a lot of different organizations like that.
So now, if somebody wants to learn more on the website, is there information if they want to, if they're a high school student, if they want to get involved or start a chapter in their high school, or if they're a charity organization that wants to have access to some of the kits?
Yeah. So if you go to firstaidforall.org, there's a tab on there that says contact us. So it's just, it's really simple. It's just give your name, why you're interested, how you can help out, and then you just click send. And then we get the email, then we respond back. And actually, we actually got a submission from California in which there was this high school student in Oakland, California, who learned about First Aid for All and then somewhat felt inspired to do something about it. So she started a petition to get more first aid kits and like give them to people in need there, because apparently in the area where she's in, more than 60% of people don't have first aid kits within their homes. So she started a petition to biomedical companies as well as hospitals to give old supplies so that she can start on this. So it was pretty great to see how First Aid for All started something in the other side of the country.
And there, you also have a Facebook page, First Aid for All.
Yeah, we have First Aid for All on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being a guest today.
Thank you. It's great being here.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.